Here I am again, just me, Matt Harmon, solo on the Tuesday podcast. Unfortunately, becoming a theme here late Monday night because injuries are a consistent theme in the NFL. And I'm here because you all saw it. Nick Chubb, in the first half of the Monday Night Football Steelers-Browns matchup, leaves the game with a brutal injury, so brutal that the broadcast even said they had been told it was not to be seen. It was not to be shown again, Joe Buck said. Troy Aikman said it was about as bad as you can get, and it certainly felt that way. It looked that way. It's the same knee that Nick Chubb had suffered a serious, as Adam Schefter in a tweet interestingly phrased it, it's the same knee that Nick Chubb had dislocated where he tore his MCL, PCL, and LCL with cartilage damage in October 2015 back in college at Georgia. So this is a serious injury. Sources are already fearing the worst, that this is potentially at least a season-ending injury with maybe multiple ligament damages. So at this point, it's hard to imagine that we're going to see Nick Chubb again here in the 2023 NFL season. And, you know, he's one of the best players in the league. He was a first-round pick in fantasy. He was a guy that, you know, some of our analysts here, like Andy Behrens, were ranking inside the top five overall players. And it was deserved because he absolutely is that good. He absolutely is a face of the NFL, probably one of the best, if not the very best, pure running backs in the NFL right now. The Browns losing a player like that, it's a cataclysmic effect to the entire offense. But going forward, it will be more on Deshaun Watson to carry the load. And, you know, for large parts of this game on Monday night, he did not look like a player that's capable of doing that. Maybe this allows them to get into more shotgun heavy principles. It sort of makes the offense more Watson heavy. But again, based on what I've seen so far, I'm not sure so sure that that's a good thing. From a pure fantasy perspective, the real fallout here is what happens at the running back position. Jerome Ford has been the backup basically all offseason. They traded for Pierre Strong from the New England Patriots. They added him to the equation here. It still looks like Ford clearly has an edge as this backup running back right now. He scored a touchdown pretty soon after Nick Chubb left the game. So he should be somebody that is 100% rostered come the waiver run this weekend. Maybe they make a call to Kareem Hunt, who obviously is still out there and has familiarity with the system. But right now, I'm expecting Jerome Ford to be the running back, the lead guy in an offense that's been very fantasy friendly, that's been really efficient from a rushing perspective. So he's a guy that, again, should be 100% rostered. But let's remember, an offense loses a player like this, we've discussed it before, the entire operation just gets worse and much less appealing. So that is the unfortunate update, an injury to, again, one of the true faces of the league and one of the best players at his position right now in the NFL. The entire sports world was kind of distraught at this injury on Monday night. So with that, let's get to the rest of the regular Tuesday program here on the podcast. It's Tuesday, September 19th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show presented by NerdWallet. It's a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
Man, just a perfect week too for me personally, fantasy-wise, hometown team, everything clicking on all cylinders. I can't imagine the people have found anything to complain about this week or panic about this week because, I mean, it was just smooth sailing.
Oh, absolutely. Smooth sailing it. And the best part, Andy, for you, as you mentioned personally, the hometown team, the Bears are going to be a big theme of the show here on the People's Panic Meter for this one. We will get into that in just a little bit. But it's funny, too, because, right, like, I feel like, Andy, week one was so kind of out of left field and so outrageous in so many ways. And in a lot of facets, it was like, okay, you know, at least things kind of got back to normal in week two. Not everything, and we're going to talk about some of those performances on the show. Like, a lot of things got back to normal, but it must be nice for you personally that the one constant through the first 2 weeks is the Bears still look like ass.
Yeah. I mentioned after week one that I was already, that resignation had already sort of settled over me, right? I wasn't even panicking anymore because everything that was wrong with last year's Bears is still wrong with this year's Bears. So like, what are you going to fret about? Like, you just have confirmation of, the absolute disaster that was the 2022 season. And here we are. Like, it's just kind of a big civic embarrassment. I don't have really anything positive to say. We're doing this thing again where they're probably going to have to flip a switch at the end of September change a bunch of things in the offense. Like I thought we worked through all that last year. Like anything that I thought was progress last season has evaporated. They had no institutional memory for that. So I guess we're just learning all the lessons again. Fields has looked awful. The play calling has been awful. Opponents are kind of clowning the team for the predictability of various play calls. So yeah, that's where the Bears are at. That's the state of the franchise at the moment.
All right, so let's dive into the week two, the People's Panic Meter segment here. And again, we are starting with the Bears. Before we get into that, remember, this show is all about you. Every week we do this thing. We reach out to you to see which has you panicked heading into a Monday morning about your fantasy team after all the action on Sunday. The best responses, and oh boy, we have a great one to start, will be discussed on the show. A couple ways to get featured in the show, a couple ways to be a part of this. One, the mailbag. You can shoot a written email, voice, video, whatever, memo to fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. Best ones, the voice memos, the videos, those get bumped to the top. I also solicit responses on social media at @MattHarmon_BYB. That's how you can submit those there. So again, Andy, you actually also asked on X, Twitter, whatever it is, this week. You said, hey, if you want to rant about the Bears, you can go ahead and do that. Well, Dylan O was happy to oblige. He sends in a recording that he says summarizes how I feel about the Bears as a lifelong fan. Pain, suffering. Feel free to use however you want. Clip it, edit it, whatever. Well, let's go ahead and let it roll, Dylan.
All right, you asked for it. Here it is. What the hell is going on in Chicago? I don't even know what I'm watching, okay? I've never seen a team be so open to throwing screens over screens over screens when our downfield passing kind of works. 2 30-yard passes right to DJ Moore. First drive, boom, everything's looking good. It's clicking, all right? We moved on from week one. We stopped throwing to the ball laterally. It's all working. Nah, that. We abandoned that. Next drive, screens. We're off the field. That. Our offense is done. Toast. All right, Justin Fields can't run anymore this year. Forgot how to do it. Just getting contained, left and right. Khalil Herbert can't run. Only guy who can run, rookie. We give him 4 carries, all right? The only explosive run in the whole game was him. He's off the field. Why would we use him? No, makes no sense. Justin Fields, he doesn't even look like he knows what the hell he's doing, okay? He's stuck on his first read. He doesn't even know how to make reads, okay? He's missing wide open receivers. I'm getting Mitch Trubisky flashbacks. I don't know what he sees out there, but I feel like he always takes the check down. It never goes anywhere. Cole Kmet looks horrible. This is just another year being a Chicago Bears fan. And it was perfectly encapsulated by the last play where we threw a screen on our own 1-yard line that was then picked off and walked in. It was just perfect.
Well, Andy?
Yeah.
How do you feel?
The first thing that hits me there is that you can tell that, like, This is not Dylan's first Bears rodeo, right? Like you can tell from the anger in his voice that, you know, this there's this thing that goes on with the Bears and has happened historically. We can take it back to like the Jay Cutler years, even before that, where the fan base is like, is it the coach's fault? Is it the quarterback's fault? Is it the front office's fault? Is it ownership's fault? Like, and it just becomes the Spider-Man meme, everybody pointing at everybody, everything is terrible all the time. You can tell that, like, the, you know, Getsy, Coach Flus, Justin Fields polls thing is not, like, Dylan has done this before, I've done this before, every Bears fan has done this. And the kind of rant that that he sent in is, I don't know, I got like 3-4 different text threads that are going with different friends that basically feels the same way, right? Everybody's mad. Everybody's just mad that this Bears thing looks exactly like the worst moments of prior seasons. It's terrible. And he also, like, Dylan hit all the really important notes there too. Again, everything that was wrong with the team a year ago, still wrong. Justin Fields, I don't even put this on him. Like, I think he's been failed by the coaching staff. 'Cause you could see, I mean, his rookie season, you can't watch like the Niners game from his rookie season, the Pittsburgh game from his rookie season, and not see pretty exceptional traits, and not, you know, in that moment, like, we all felt really good. Like, he, obviously he wasn't polished. He wasn't perfect. There were things to be ironed out, but like, you could see some traits that were unteachable. You know, great arm talent, obviously a great running quarterback, and like we're still in the same place. And in some ways, it feels like regression. There were multiple moments where you had receivers downfield who were like waving or clapping their hands to make it clear just how open they were, and Fields unable to get the ball out, like waiting, eventual sack. Just a mess, start to finish. The final pick six that like really ended the game.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously an awful play. And then you have Bucks defensive players following the game, basically saying, oh yeah, we'd seen that formation. They just run the same thing. So we knew what was coming. And so you get, you know, a lineman who just sort of peels off and steps in the path of the pass and takes back. Like it was, I don't know, the predictability of this team and the multiple failings of this team, the defense is off. There's just nothing you can point to. There's nothing you can point to and be like, well, at least we have that solved. So, Dylan, I hear you. I'm almost like, I'm not sorry that I solicited this, because it's good to get these feelings out, right? But hopefully after this week, the Bears aren't even panicking people anymore. And like, we can just move on knowing that the Bears are what they are.
I think it's so easy to just be like, yep, the Bears stink. Like you said, Andy, what else is new? No one should really be surprised. And my God, by the way, it's not necessarily going to get better. They go into Kansas City in week three. They get Denver in week four. Denver's a pretty good defense. They get Washington in week five. They're good. Like, that's not like a point to me, like the clear bounce back spot for Justin Fields and the boys here. There was a little bit of hype around the Bears, hype that I honestly think was a little misguided. There was a little bit of, things are better. But how much better are they good? Like, just because you're better doesn't mean you're good. And I think that's where the Bears were this offseason. Yeah. But really, the problem from a fantasy perspective is that people drafted DJ Moore way too high. People drafted Justin Fields way too high. And like, these are guys you were counting on. And I mean, DJ Moore, 20 yards in the first game, 100 yards in the second game. There are going to be a lot of weeks like that. And for Fields, it's just like, I hope he gets 16 fantasy points like next week in week three. And that's really tough when you drafted this guy and like to be a top five QB1. And now he's like somebody that I'm worried you can't start in week three.
Yeah, this was the, you know, I feel like we talked about this with Fields a couple times. He was almost free last year in drafts. So there wasn't, you know, there wasn't this sense that, oh boy, if Justin Fields busts, what am I going to do? But he was like your fourth or fifth round pick this year. And like, you can't, I don't know, if you're going to take a quarterback that high, that's not really a traditional quarterback round. You're going to take a quarterback that high, he's got to hit, because the opportunity cost is just so great. Like, right. Like the receivers that go in that range are outstanding. The, you know, you can hit on a running back in that range. Like you can't miss on a fourth round quarterback. And we're kind of headed that direction because you know, among the other things that the Bears aren't doing, there's not a lot of designed runs here for Justin Fields. And maybe that's the switch that flips again once we get a couple weeks deeper into the season, just as it did last year. But the rushing upside has been pretty minimal. You know, he had a rushing touchdown for, he was fine on the ground the week before, but we're not seeing like, you know, a half dozen designed runs a game, 4, 5, 6 designed runs a game that really pop. And I don't honestly know if that's the coaching staff's preference. I don't know if it's Fields' preference. It may be.
I can't get out of my head. Number one, it's funny that we do this on Twitter, right? Where people are like, oh, there's no designed runs. But like, we're also saying like, you know, Anthony Richardson really can't take this kind of punishment. Fields was getting obliterated last year to the point where he like wasn't viable by the end of the season because he had taken so many hits. And I can never get out of my head being at the Super Bowl doing Eckler's Edge with Justin Fields as a guest and Austin making the joke like there's only 1,000 yard rusher on this stage and it's not me. And it wasn't me either. And Matt Harmon, zero NFL 1,000 yard rush seasons. And Justin being like, yeah, oh boy. And, you know, Eckler at the end of it saying, maybe we'll see you run for 1,000 yards again. And he's like, dude, I hope not. I can't remember if that's on camera or not. People can go back and watch that Super Bowl show. But he was like, I really hope not. So. Yeah, because he got beat to hell by the end of the year.
Yeah. It's, you know, you mentioned Anthony Richardson, and that's the other point that I want to make is part of the frustration as a Bears fan right now is you only have to look at what they're doing in Indianapolis to set up Anthony Richardson for success and sort of lean into the things that he was going to do really well immediately. And they give him a bunch of like layup easy throws, but they're not doing this thing that the Bears are where it's just like the same screen passes again and again and again. You know, it's they'll roll him out. He's had some connections with Josh Downs that have been really it's a fun offense, and it is perfectly tailored to him. And that is just exactly what we're not doing in Chicago.
Yep. And never were. And I think that's why it's just been kind of doomed this whole time. All right, let's move on to the next one here. Jim L sends in this audio. Let's take a listen.
All right, people's panic meter. I have a few leagues, and I kind of targeted a lot of the same people in many of those leagues. Here are the five that I was targeting the most. That would be Josh Jacobs, Jahan Dotson, Chris Godwin, Dalton Schultz, and Damian Pierce. So I am in a whole lot of panic that I am going to get absolutely no production out of most of my roster in most of my leagues. Thanks.
All right, Andy. So that's an interesting mix of players here. I would say that the two that got submitted a lot were Josh Jacobs and Damian Pierce. Look, I get Jacobs. It's tough because negative yards. That's always going to be tough to look at from your running back. But you got to remember, you know, injuries to both starting receivers coming at, like, those guys will probably be back at some point. I don't know. Are you panicked about either Josh Jacobs or Damian Pierce?
If there's one player here that I'm a little bit more panicked about, and panic is strong, but the offensive line situation for the Texans right now is pretty terrible, right? They've got like four injured dudes, Tunsil, like that's just bad. There's not many running backs who are going to overcome a situation like that. It's been a fun offense. CJ Stroud has been fine. They found some things at receiver, but it is super tough sledding for Damian Pierce right now. So I'm a little bit more worried there. I'm not that worried about Josh Jacobs. Like, this is one of those things that you get to complain about because it actually does suck when you're, you know, second round running back or whatever, third round running back gives you negative yardage. He still contributed as a receiver. That's going to be a consistent story throughout the year, right? So like but Josh Jacobs is going to be fine. He has been the one point that I'd like to make with Jacobs is that he wasn't like, last year wasn't like some fluky season for him. Josh Jacobs, from the moment he came into the league, has been one of the NFL's most elusive runners. That shows up on film. That shows up like in all the, anybody who charts missed tackles will tell you that Josh Jacobs is one of the most elusive runners in the league. Like that's just him. And unless that has fundamentally changed, and I don't think it has, like I'm not super worried about Jacobs. There's going to be many better days and they're going to lean on him.
Yeah, Pierce, I think he's probably not going to have that running back one ceiling because he hasn't fully been the every down back that maybe people hoped for. But we also haven't seen the Texans in like a normal game script. They also haven't had their offensive line to establish a run in like a normal game script. Some of these guys will be back, like Laremy Tunsil will be back. Titus Howard might be back at some point. So some of these guys like might start to get back for Damian Pierce to where they get a rather normal run game going. But I do feel weirdly encouraged for Pierce, like if that can happen, that CJ Stroud has been so good and so viable to this point. You know, Nico Collins has been awesome. Shout out to me on Nico Collins. He's been playing so good in isolation for a couple of years now. And like, we're finally seeing it now that he has a real NFL quarterback, and CJ Stroud's been great. So that's good news. That is kind of a victory lap. Sorry. My apologies. Please forgive me. I think that just with Stroud looking pretty good, that could be good news for Pierce if they can get this run game going. Everyone else here, like Dalton Schultz, you can't be panicking about Dalton Schultz. Just cut him and get another tight end.
What exactly were your expectations for Dalton Schultz? Yeah, that's how I feel. Like, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, he's just Dalton Schultz. What the hell was going to happen there? Like, Dalton Schultz was not your lead winning
tight end. I'm really panicking that he's not giving me 4 for 48 or whatever that I was expecting. So, yeah, that's whatever. Chris Godwin, I mean, I did say on the podcast last night, I think it was last night with Scott, or if not, I definitely wrote about it in Care Don't Care, that I am taking the L on thinking Godwin could be better with Baker Mayfield. I do think, like, from a rest of season perspective, you've got to have Mike Evans up there, but I think he will have his days. That offense is still rather concentrated between those two dudes. And lastly, Jahan Dotson. This actually mixes in with our next one, where Daniel N says, "Hi, folks. Any hope left for Antonio Gibson, or should we drop him entirely in Yahoo Standard Leagues?" Andy, I think we can both be pretty quick and say the answer to that is yes. You can go ahead and drop him for sure.
I was even kind of in on Antonio Gibson, and I dropped him after week one everywhere. Like for I don't know, Kyren Williams, for you know, taking a shot at Puka, for absolutely anybody who was on the waiver list for week one. I talked myself into Antonio Gibson maybe being a thing. He's clearly not going to be a thing. That early fumble in week one may have doomed him, but he is just clearly not a part of that rotation. That is Brian Robinson's backfield.
Yeah, Brian Robinson's going to go down as a really, really good pick, I think, for people. But again, the second part of Daniel's question is, how are we feeling about the Commanders' offense rest of season? So this mixes in with our Jahan Dotson thing here. I think Sam Howell looked pretty good last week. That was a really encouraging game for him against Denver in a hostile environment. I felt that was a nice moment for him. We got to remember they're working in a lot of new pieces here. Sam Howell is a day three starting quarterback in his third start. Eric Bieniemy, I think it's going pretty well for Eric Bieniemy so far. Not going so well for Matt Nagy as the offensive coordinator with Kansas City, by the way. It's going so well, but it's still breaking in a new offense there, right? Dotson, I'm not sure I can really allow panic on Dotson, Andy. I don't know how you feel about this, because one guy was like a seventh, eighth round pick. Maybe he got a little higher than that when we thought Terry McLaurin might miss, you know, extended time, but that was kind of over and shut pretty quickly. As much as I like Jahan Dotson, he's the number two receiver on his team. Terry McLaurin is that dude. They are spreading the ball out a little more than I like, but that might change again when they break this offense in more. And the reality is, Andy, outside of like Justin Jefferson, every receiver has down games. Okay. There are every receiver in the NFL is capable of putting up 22 yards in a game. So I'm not panicked about Jahan Dotson. I think he's a really good player. He looks great, by the way, on film. The big games will come with him at some point.
Yeah. Dotson's seen like a dozen targets. So it's not, you know, it's not dreadful in that respect. He also never comes off the field. Like, he's playing 85, 87% of the snaps. And as you say, that like the list of receivers who are just every week 70 yards, seven catches, what like that, that's a list that includes the guys that were taken in the first and second round and no one else. Like, you need to be like 160, 170 target receiver to be on that very short list. And that was never going to be Jahan Dotson. I do think that this is one of those situations where a guy got like a lot of preseason helium, a lot of hype. All of it, you know, richly deserved. He's a very good player, but that didn't mean he was all of a sudden going to become like the absolute centerpiece of the offense and see, you know, 12 targets a week. I guess you're disappointed that he just didn't have like a supernova opening week or second week. And why has my Jahan Dotson bet taken so long to cash? Well, like, it's going to cash at some point. He's a really good player and it's, Yeah. It's a really long season. So I wouldn't sweat that, but I would also, like, you just have to be aware that there are going to be a bunch of 3 for 35 weeks for almost every receiver in the game.
Sometimes it can even happen for receivers all the way at the top of the draft, as Carl sends in Matt and Andy. I could say I'm panicking about my first round choice, Jamar Chase, but I believe Cincinnati will figure it out. He actually goes on to talk about another player, but let's stick on Cincy for a second here. Most people do not seem to feel the same way. Do not seem to feel as good as Carl does about this. When I asked for submissions on social media, I got a lot of responses. This is my favorite response of the bunch, coming in from @pickinglastff. Ironic, that one there. My Joe Burrow / Chase stack is looking terrible. Happy I only did it on one team. Burrow injured, Chase is lost. Searching for Jesus? I don't know, but maybe skip next Sunday and go pray, homie. I mean, my God, religion is in the mix. Church is in the mix here. This is how bad things have gotten for Jamar Chase. Andy, I know I came on the show last week and I was like, I'm not worried about the Bengals, whatever. 7 days later, I feel a little bit different about the whole situation.
Yeah, the only thing that gives me pause with the Bengals, obviously, is that Joe Burrow seemed to aggravate the calf issue, right? Like, he had, and it wasn't, you know, a 5-alarm situation for the training staff necessarily, but Burrow was sitting there on the sideline with the little massage gun that you buy at the airport or whatever. Like, that was a bad scene. He was limping around. So we have to have like a mobile, healthy Joe Burrow. As for Chase, like, separate from Burrow, separate from team context, I wouldn't worry at all. He's one of the, I don't know, three best, five best receivers in the game. He's in a situation that is eventually going to be really ripe, that is going to be great. He's just a dynamic player. He's seen 17 targets so far. There's no obvious worry with Jamar Chase other than the health of his quarterback. Like, Burrow has to be okay. If that's not the, you know, like, if Burrow's wrong, if Burrow is going to miss time, if Burrow is going to be like a compromised version of himself, then it's not nothing. Then I understand a certain level of panic because this is your first round pick. But I'm not worried about Chase individually. And in fact, yeah. I think there's probably a buy low opportunity with Chase, given the number of people who actually reached out to us about Ja'Marr Chase. I think he is actually probably a screaming buy right now.
It is just a little risky, though. You know, Zach Taylor says we're not sure about Joe Burrow for Monday night. They play the Rams. Mm-hmm. The betting line actually moved from Rams plus six to Rams plus two for next week on Monday night. That is a little alarming. The backup quarterback is Jake Browning. Wouldn't say that that's like, let's just go ahead and drop in somebody we know will be very capable of getting Ja'Marr Chase the ball. I'm with you that, yeah, Chase probably should have held on to that touchdown, Rocky Sin in coverage last week. But, I mean, overall, I think Chase has played really well as an individual. He still gets open. He's capable of doing all the dynamic things he possibly could have. But, I mean, yeah, dude, here's the deal. Like, you take a receiver in the first round and the quarterback gets hurt.
Yeah,
that guy, you should be panicked about that. But and obviously there was risk coming into the year with Burrow being injured in training camp. And Andy, I can't get out of the back of my head. This is another thing I can't stop thinking about is Ja'Marr Chase saying, I don't even want to see Joe Burrow until week five.
Right. Right.
You know, when he randomly said that in training camp. And now are we at a point where Joe Burrow, we don't see him until week five? Like maybe they put him on the shelf.
There was such
a
weird specificity to that, right? That it had to come from somewhere. He probably didn't pull the number five out of absolutely nowhere. So I'm sure at some point there was real fear that Joe Burrow was going to miss a bunch of time. And it was, you know, obviously great that he came back, but he needs to get right for that offense to get right and for them to reach the point in the, you know, I mean, that's a team that's played deep into January in back-to-back years. So for them to get back there again, obviously he has to be fully functional.
Tough, too, that they're down two, not just 0-2, they're down two games in the division. So that's another reason where they're kind of like, ooh, rest Joe Burrow, fall behind in the AFC. I don't know. There's a lot to think about for Cincinnati. And I think for people, I'm with you that overall, I think, yeah, Ja'Marr Chase, probably a buy, but I feel a little less bullish about it than I did maybe a week ago. So I'm allowing some panic here on the Bengals. Again, Carl goes on to talk about a different player, says, however, I am starting to get panicked about Isaiah Pacheco. I watched this guy run the ball and he passes the eye test. It seems every time he touches the ball, the chains keep moving for KC. I just do not understand why he is not producing. I'm starting to wonder if Andy Reid running backs are starting to become a full fade in fantasy football. So, I mean, typically that's probably not the case. Andy's given us some pretty good running performances before, Andy, if memory serves, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Andy Reid has helped produce some of the like signature running back performances in fantasy history. So I wouldn't like it. It is bad process to fade Andy Reid and to fade Andy Reid running backs. I wouldn't go that far.
You wouldn't go that far, but I do watch the Chiefs and I'm like, sometimes I do think like, yo, you spent all this money on the offensive line. I mean, you're pulling Juwan Taylor in the middle of the game because he can't stop getting penalties. But still, you spent all this money on the offensive line. Why don't we just, you know, sack up and run the ball down their throats every now and again? It would be, I think they get a little too cute. I mean, not to bring Matt Nagy up again, but he's like the king of getting too cute. They get a little too cute in Kansas City sometimes. It would be nice if Pacheco was a guy they were going to hand the ball like 18 times to and be that sort of ground and pound option and build a different type of team. But I mean, that was really never in his range of outcomes, I don't think.
They may have to get there because obviously the receiving core outside of Kelsey is super ordinary. It's like relentlessly ordinary. I would still be surprised if they reconfigured the offense around running Pacheco when you've got Patrick Mahomes. You've still got like an all-time top three quarterback, one quarterback. So I don't think they're going to do that. This also just sounds like this sort of fantasy manager that really wishes that every backfield would come down to just one guy. Like it's, you know, 2001 or 1998 or something like that. And you're just that is definitely not going to happen with this Chiefs team, in part because they just really like Jerick McKinnon. And Jerick McKinnon was a super productive player for him last year, particularly in the second half. Like they're not going to stop playing multiple guys. And I don't think they're trying to feed Isaiah Pacheco 25 times, but that's not why you drafted him either. You didn't take him where you took him because you were like, oh yeah, I can easily see the entire offense being built around Isaiah Pacheco's talents within a short period of time. Like that's just not on the table. What you're hoping for is Kansas City gets back to being the kind of offense that can score 30, 35, 38 against any opponent. And Pacheco gets his slice of that.
Right. That would be nice. If they could score some more points. I think that would definitely help out Isaiah Pacheco. All right, next one up here, Ethan C. Actually sent in a lot of people he's panicking about, so tough scene. Sorry about that, but let's try to narrow it down to just a couple of guys here. Did mention Josh Jacobs, who we already talked about, but Ethan goes on to say, love the show and reception perception. Shout out to you. Appreciate it. Is it even worth worrying about Rashad Bateman or Kyle Pitts? Bateman was always going to ramp up slow, even if his usage post Odell injury is annoying. Probably referencing the fact that Nelson Aguilar ran like 14 routes and got six targets. I understand that. They likely weren't going to risk injury to Bateman and attempt to compensate for an Odell injury. And Pitts is clearly lower on the Atlanta pecking order than we'd like, given his talent, but it'd be foolish to think they'll change too drastically while winning games. On Bateman, Andy, I mean, this was why he was a risky pick, is because I think he's clearly getting eased in. I think it's great for the Ravens that, like, oh, guys get hurt and then Nelson Aguilar is a player you turn to, as opposed to in years past, the Ravens' number one receiver would be a Nelson Aguilar type. So I think that is good news. I also think it clearly shows, again, that they are easing him in, that he wasn't like thrown to the fire when Odell gets hurt. But I get the point here that he's not really somebody you can even consider playing at this point.
Yeah, I feel like this question was really, can I drop Rashad Bateman? That's like the reading between the lines here. Like, you're obviously not going to play him. You're not going to play him next week. You're probably not going to play him the week after that. And he doesn't have a lot of trade value right now. And there are some fun names on the waiver wire this particular week, most weeks. So I'm going to approve that. If what you're really asking is, can you drop him? I think you can probably drop him, because, again, no trade market, and you're not willing to play him. So that's kind of the definition of a guy that we can cut loose. I do think he's really talented, and this situation could swing back around to him. There are well-known health issues here. I think if you're the Ravens, you just kind of want to get him to December healthy and ready to contribute in the most meaningful way possible. He was also never going to be, like, there wasn't a clear path for Rashad Bateman to be this team's number one receiver, because Mark Andrews is still in town and great. And Odell Beckham was signed for there's a lot of excitement around Odell Beckham, and he got paid. We knew Zay Flowers was going to be good. I don't know if we knew that he would be this good, but we knew he was going to be good. So there wasn't, I don't know, at no point was anybody screaming that Rashad Bateman is going to be the Ravens' clear number one receiver. Nobody should have thought that going into drafts. So, you know, it's a swing and a miss. There's a lot of those in fantasy, but I doubt that you took him high enough that you can really say that you're panicky about him.
And, like, let's revisit Bateman in November, December. I realize you can't sit here and like wait for Bateman at that point. You need, like Andy said, you need to make roster moves. You need to potentially beef up that fake team of yours. But if Bateman is still playing like 30% of the snaps by December, then I'm willing to throw in the towel on like the player probably ever doing anything. But I hold out some hope that he can still be that guy at the end of the season. So let's talk Bateman at that point. But and just on Kyle Pitts here, I mean, one thing at a time, folks. Like, we just got Drake London back in the box. You know, we just got his season going. And, you know, this is something, I don't know if this is the right move, but, or if I'm just totally wrong about this, but, you know, if you were gonna pick one person from the Falcons passing offense to get home this year, I think the choice was clearly, obviously, Drake London, because even when those two guys played together last year, the Pitts freak out was happening, but London like had a few good games to start his rookie season. Then he kind of went quiet, and then he popped at the end when Pitts was obviously out. But I just think he has established himself as like a dude a little bit more than Pitts has. Not really any fault of Pitts's necessarily, just like his role in the offense, Drake London's, is so much more clear than Kyle Pitts to this point. So that's kind of, I don't know, that's kind of where I'm at with Pitts, that he's still an unknown. The offense is an unknown, and I don't know how much panicking you're doing, because find me the tight end hero on the waiver wire, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Exactly. We all can't have Hunter Henry, right? And the rest of us are just scrambling. The thing with Pitts is it comes down to what your expectations were. Like, if you drafted him as like the third, fourth, fifth tight end off the board, and you were celebrating when you did it because you thought you had a league winner, I mean, that's just going to be wrong. I would throw in the towel on that. I was not in that camp. Wonderful talent, but he's clearly not going to see that kind of weekly volume. It's just absolutely not going to happen. But can Kyle Pitts be I don't know, can he finish the season as a top 8 fantasy tight end, top 10 fantasy tight end? Can he be in that sort of vast middle ground where we're really just hoping for like 6 or 7 touchdowns, 600 or 700 yards, and there's a whole mess of players that are kind of in that cluster? Obviously he can, but a player like that is just not going to be like, they're not going to be particularly helpful week to week, right? Like they're going to have a ton of 3-catch 29 yard games, and then they're going to have other games where they find the end zone and they matter a little bit. And I think that's where Kyle Pitts is just going to fall. It's too bad. And I hope down the road we get like the full Kyle Pitts experience. But you also have to, I mean, you just look at the way the ball has been distributed in the first couple of weeks for Atlanta, and Tyler Algier and Bijan Robinson week in and week out are going to combine for like 35 touches. And then the rest of the offense is going to be begging for the remaining 10, you know, and a lot of those are going to go to London. London's a great player who clearly established rapport with Ritter at the end of last season. There's just not a lot left for anybody else.
No. No, there is not. And if people have had Kyle Pitts on their teams the last couple of years, they're well aware of that. So hard to panic on something that is kind of just to be expected. All right. We're going to recap the rest of the folks that have you all panicking coming out of week 2. But before that, let's take a quick break. All right. Let's get into some of our social media suggestions here. First one comes in from @Dumanomics. They mentioned Josh Jacobs and A.J. Brown. We talked about Josh Jacobs. A.J. Brown, bro. I mean, Dumanomic says that he's been so far while Devonta is going off. I mean, this is basically just jealousy, right, Andy? You know, it's like the other receiver on the other side of the field is doing all this great stuff, and my guy's not. A.J. Brown had a 7-catch game in week 1. I get it was a nationally televised game the week after, but still, like, what are we doing here?
I mean... Dumanomics knows that a touchdown was called back, surely, right? We're all watching the same game. AJ Brown's great. AJ Brown's a 1400 yard receiver who's like in that club of players who doesn't really have to worry about workload and is basically going to be an every week, you know, is going to be an every week contributor, even if he doesn't like go supernova constantly. I don't know what to say to somebody whose biggest fantasy worry is AJ Brown. Like, congratulations, you've got to be storming the league if this is your biggest problem. So no, I like AJ Brown has not in fact been AJ Brown's a really good player. Like, I don't know, what are you going to do? You're going to trade your way out of this AJ Brown mess that you've gotten yourself? No, of course not. You can complain a little bit, but there's certainly no cause to panic here.
Yeah, we allow complaints. You can complain about what happened in week 2. That was frustrating. You know, Jalen Hurts misses him on some deep throws. One probably should have been a pass interference. The other one in the end zone. Oh my God, I can't deal with the fights on the side. The fights on the sideline. I mean, give me a break. I mean, come on. Like, find something better. We're watching a football game here. We're not watching Bravo or whatever, okay? Like, give me a break with the dramatic nonsense. Get out of here with that.
Brown had like a deep shot that he caught barely out of bounds in week 1. He had another deep shot that was like in the end zone, in coverage, just didn't come down with it. Like, he's been so close to having just an absolutely incredible open to his season, and some of those things are going to connect, and he's going to be totally fine.
Yeah, and like week 3, Monday Night Football, against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that has some injuries in the secondary.
Yeah.
If he gets 100 yards and 2 scores and Devonta Smith, oh no, then the sky is falling for him. He has 4 catches for 33 yards. Like, that's all well within the range of outcomes. So, yes, Devonta Smith, very, very good player. He's going to get his. AJ Brown, also a very good player. He's going to get his. Let's go on to the next one. @Kapira_FF. Giving it a shot, sends in Breece Hall. Limited touches were expected, and it was a tough defense today, but his tweet is making some headlines, and I'm a bit worried he might want out, which would of course kill his value for the season. I think the whole he wants out thing is a little overstretching it. Even if he wanted out of the Jets, and GFL, pal, you're not going anywhere. Second year running back. I mean, but he did reference the tweet again that had 4 football emojis, probably in reference to being upset about the 4 carries he got in this game. It's weird, right? Because coming out of week one, Andy, it's like, wow, Breece Hall had that big run. I feel so much better about him.
Yeah.
But then you're reminded what it looks like playing in a Zach Wilson offense where you're just getting boat raced by a good defense. So I don't know if I'm allowing full panic on Breece Hall, but I'm at least allowing you to feel like I don't quite know what to do at this point.
Yeah, I definitely understand, because you are now tied not to the situation that you thought you were tying yourself to, right? Like you thought you were buying into a, you know, and paying a pretty good price to do it, an ascending Jets offense that had a Hall of Fame quarterback, and man, this thing is really going to click, and like everything that we'd heard in the offseason was great, and it was going to be an excellent story, and now you're stuck with this sort of Zach Wilson-led misery. I get it. They possess the ball for 17 minutes and 45 seconds of game time in the loss to Dallas, and it was a great defense. And like, there's just no way for anybody to thrive when you don't even have the ball for 18 minutes. And I don't know that this is going to be the last time that we see a single digit carry game for Breece Hall, because not only is he just coming back from the injury, but again, this is Zach Wilson. This is an offense that is going to struggle to get to 20, 21 points in many games against credible opponents. So it's tough. This is not one of those AJ Brown, Josh Jacobs situations where I can't see any reason to panic. I can see plenty, because when the quarterback is bad, it hits everyone.
And it's a split backfield. You think maybe at some point the coaches are able to look at these two running backs and be like, I think this Breece Hall guy gives us a little bit more than Dalvin Cook at this point, but I don't know. I love the whole narrative that like, oh yeah, now that Aaron Rodgers is hurt, they just don't have to play these guys that he made them sign. One, we don't know that I didn't think the Dalvin Cook he made them sign thing was like a bit of a stretch. The Alan Lazard thing, yeah. Randall Cobb for sure. That was obviously Aaron Rodgers, but I think this coaching staff wanted Dalvin Cook too. And
yeah.
Also, by the way, what are you going to do? These are the guys on the team now. They're going to play them. So that I'm with you that I'm allowing a little bit of like, I'm moving around in my seat a little bit with the uneasiness
exactly.
If I've got Breece Hall. All right, next one here comes in from @Morty, a bunch of letters. Alexander Mattison is really starting to look like, and it's a picture of Mike Davis in a Falcons uniform. Yep, I mean, Mike Davis in a Falcons uniform is kind of the picture of the running back dead zone, and if things keep up, Alexander Mattison is going to look like is going to be the picture perfect poster boy of the running back dead zone going forward.
Yeah, that is just exactly right. And this is kind of what you sign up for when you get running backs in this range. I will say that Mattison has to, like, he's got to make a bunch of noise against the Chargers this week. This is such a meaningful game for both teams, right? Because obviously both teams are pretty good last year, playoff teams last year, and now they're both sitting 0-2 and both feel like they're at a terrible crossroads. And, you know, they each have to get this game. Mattison, this is as good a matchup as Mattison is going to see. And he's got some decent ones coming up. He's got Carolina beyond that. So like he's got the Bears coming up in not too many weeks. So like there's a bunch of friendly spots for him. We definitely need to see him erupt against the Chargers, because if he doesn't, it's not so much a fantasy question anymore as like the Vikings probably got to try out some other solutions too, right? Like either from the current roster right now, or they got to look at one of these free agent backs, or they got to consider trading. They got to do something because they haven't gotten any production out of Mattison so far. So I will definitely allow some panic here, because you thought you were being sneaky and you thought you were getting an RB1 at a, you know, at an RB3 price, but it just has not happened to this point.
He's a bit of a weird fit for the offense that they're running the first 2 weeks, where they're just dropping back a ton and throwing the ball a ton. Like that's not the Alexander Mattison show. Like they need to kind of get under center and like more of a power run thing. But I don't know. Maybe that's a weird thing. Weird that they made the decision to bring him back. All right. Last one here comes in from @IanFiletti. Jahmyr Gibbs seemingly being behind Craig Reynolds. This one is topical because obviously David Montgomery said today he's going to miss a few weeks with a thigh bruise. It's definitely, hey, if you got Jahmyr Gibbs on your fantasy team, just be prepared for Craig Reynolds to get like 15 carries next week and not have like, oh, now David Montgomery's out and Jahmyr Gibbs is just the dude. And this was kind of the problem with Jahmyr Gibbs is that, and why Dave Montgomery was a value, and unfortunately he's hurt now, Andy, because they're just not gonna play the same position even if they both have RB next to their name.
Yeah, so first of all, the issue with Montgomery must be pretty significant, because he, at least throughout his Bears career, he was always the guy who came back way quicker than you expected him to from injuries that seem like they could be significant, or they could cost mm-hmm. him serious time. Like that guy, like one of Montgomery's best traits has been, to this point in his career, has been availability. So hopefully he gets right really soon. I thought this was apparent with Gibbs coming out of week one, and wrote about it, talked about it in various places. Like he needs to settle into at least some role that has obvious fantasy value beyond simply being a backup. And that's what he was in week. That's what we've seen so far. He doesn't have the goal line role. He doesn't have the 2-minute role. He doesn't have the passing down role. He's not like the third down guy. He doesn't have any of that. He was just basically a straight backup who in opening week played something like 19 snaps. And he was super fun when he was on the field, right? Like his best play was a really exciting play. But that's not going to pay the fantasy bills, and it's certainly not going to justify the draft price for Gibbs, which is not to say that he can't develop into something more. And obviously the coaches, people have done, I think, a little bit of wish casting with what the coaches have said about Gibbs, because anytime you ask an NFL head coach, like, about a player who, I don't know, did had some nice moments on limited touches, they are invariably going to say, oh yeah, we got to get him more work. That's the plan. That's just what they say. And it's a throwaway comment. It may be true of Gibbs, but I wouldn't, like, that's not the coaching staff, that's not a contract. That's not like a legally enforceable statement, right? Like they don't actually have to give him more work.
Call the fantasy police on Ben Johnson and Dan Campbell. Like, hey. Last week, they said they were going to get him more work. Arrest those guys.
I don't. Yeah, there's no, we have no enforcement capability in this situation, I'm afraid. There's no way we can make that happen. I think it will happen. I mean, my God, they took him so early in the draft. They were so excited about it. And he's certainly passed the eye test to this point. But you can't fool yourself into thinking that he was something other than a backup, like, to start the season. Like that is what he's been.
And again, I'm skeptical that just because the starter or the early down back is out means he's suddenly going to get a ton more work. So yeah. I think they had like more bit plans for him. So, okay, let me just run it to you this way. We're sitting here saying going into week three, he is not going to like take on a bigger workload just because the starter is out. And so far, he has 14 carries for 59 yards and 9 catches for 57 yards. That's 23 touches and 116 yards from scrimmage through 2 weeks. What is the percentage chance rest of season Jahmyr Gibbs returns like third round value where he went in some spots?
Oh, wow. Third round value. Yeah, it's probably 15%, something like that.
15 is really low. It's very low.
I mean, I just don't think that week three is going to, I don't think week three and week four are going to be like 25 touch weeks. I thought the Lions made it pretty clear just like by their choices on Sunday that Reynolds is going to play. Like Reynolds is going to, he may not get the full David Montgomery workload, but I don't think that Gibbs is looking at something more than like a 50-50 split. I don't think the team is trying to, get that backfield down to one guy, because most teams aren't. I don't know. I think if Reynolds were to face plant, they would probably bring somebody in, and that guy would get carries alongside Gibbs. Like I don't think there's a path here for Gibbs being, as long until they're committed to, we got to feed this guy targets. We got to get this guy 10 targets a game, 8 targets a game. Unless that's going to happen, I don't see the path to him delivering like third round value. That's pretty wild.
That's pretty bleak. So on that note, let's maybe give the people some hope. We're coming out of week two. We're heading into week three here now. Andy, give us the top 5 waiver wire pickups heading into week three.
Yeah, I first want to mention Matt Breida as kind of an honorable mention here. Saquon Barkley is going to miss some time with that ankle injury. We've seen as many as 3 weeks. That's really a bummer, obviously, for a variety of reasons, because the game is more exciting when Barkley's in it. Also, Barkley was terrific on Sunday. He was great. A couple touchdowns, carried, like dragged your fantasy team to a win, I would imagine. And now he's going to miss time. the reason that I'm not more enthusiastic about Breida or Brightwell or anybody else there is the looming matchup with San Francisco, right? Like we can look beyond that. And if it's going to be Breida against, like, I think it's Seattle after the San Francisco game, like there are some friendlier matchups down the road, but I wouldn't exactly push my chips in to get Matt Breida ahead of a matchup with the Niners. I just don't think that's like a blow up spot. My five top waiver ads this week. And I don't feel great about this fifth one, because again, I'm not encouraging people to find new and different ways to invest in the Bears offense, but I do want to call out Roschon Johnson, who has looked great. He had a relatively quiet week too, but we also did get to see Roschon streaking down the field, like waving his arm frantically at Justin Fields, wide open, could have caught like a 30-yard touchdown pass, didn't happen, but this is a gifted receiver. He is a gifted runner. The important thing here is that the Bears actually got this backfield down to two dudes in week two. That was exciting. Deontay Foreman was inactive in the game, was a healthy scratch in the game. That matters because Khalil Herbert has looked great. Roschon has looked great. This is the only aspect of the Bears offense that is working even a little bit. So when Roschon like gets 12, 13 touches in a game, he's going to make a difference. And that's something that I think can persist for the entire season. So I think he has value going forward. My number four guy is Tutu Atwell. And we are all like, everybody's buzzing about Puka Nacua, and deservedly so. He was the top waiver ad last week. Just somewhat quietly, Atwell has seen 17 targets. He's caught 13 of them for nearly 200 yards. He's been really good. He's getting... And this is the role that I can really see him settling into down the road. Once Cooper Kupp is back, he's seeing a bunch of downfield chances for this team. Mm-hmm. His ADOT is over 13 yards. Matt Stafford looks awesome. So like, if he just keeps that role, if he's just like five targets a game, something like that, when Cooper Kupp is back, he's going to have some spike weeks and he's going to be an interesting player. He's been very good so far. My number three is Justice Hill, who I did not think was going to remain eligible for this segment, but he is. He's still not rostered in even 50% of Yahoo leagues. He played almost 60% of the snaps in week two. It was the first game following the J.K. Dobbins injury. Guy handled 14 touches. I think that if Baltimore is actually, you know, this is one of those promises were made and we haven't really seen it to this point situations, but if Baltimore is actually going to start throwing to the running backs, like Justice Hill is the best candidate in that backfield for it. Probably going to split time with Gus Edwards. We know that. But they will use them interchangeably. It's not like Justice Hill will never see looks at the goal line. He said he had a couple of touchdowns just 2 weeks ago. So I think Justice Hill, interesting player for a team that is going to continue to feed him the ball. My number two is Tank Dell, who was great in week two, like absolutely great. Led the Texans in targets with 10, caught 7, 72 yards, a touchdown. The touchdown was like a little after the catch miracle. He was fantastic. His collegiate career was like just hyper productive. Last two collegiate seasons at Houston, 199 receptions, 29 touchdowns, over 2,700 receiving yards. This is just a really good player. He's kind of tiny, but he plays bigger than that. I think he's really exciting. I think that passing game has been really interesting so far. So I think Tank Dell is going to have staying power for us. And then my number one, just to bring this all back to the Bears, I think perhaps the most impactful fantasy ad this week, seriously, and this isn't even like, this is just me as an analyst. This is not me as an angry, like, you know, Bears meathead fan. I legitimately think that the Kansas City defense is probably the most impactful fantasy ad heading into week three. They are hosting the Bears next week. They are available in right around 60% of Yahoo leagues right now. They are going to finish as a top five fantasy defense. There's a really good shot that they finish as the number one overall fantasy defense. Like, you get this Bears team into a mode where they become a one-dimensional offense, and like good things are going to happen for your defense. We're probably talking five or six sacks. We're probably talking two or three turnovers. They are the defense, I think, that has the best chance to return something for a touchdown. So I feel like this could be a 20-point week incoming for Kansas City. And I would, like, this is one of those situations where if you normally stream defenses, I would go like a couple of extra fab dollars to make sure that I got Kansas City.
What a show. And we can bookend it on Bears misery. What a show, Andy Behrens. I appreciate you doing this, man. Even if, again, a lot of sad Bears stuff, but you are resigned. You are resigned.
I am. Yeah. There's no panic here. Only all right. Defeat. That's going to.
Oh my God. All right, that's going to do it for us. Tomorrow, we're back. Eckler's Edge is back after making some waves last week. Ooh, boy, should be another fun one tomorrow. Until then, we're out.